the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from Pisgah to Mitchell, from your mom's house to wherever, we're beaming wattage all over the place. You can pick us up right here on 570 AM WWNC. Pick us up speakingofstrange.com via the iHeartRadio app. And maybe you can pick us up via brainwaves. Maybe I don't even have to broadcast out of anywhere. This is Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. I am Sam, the Animal Steel, joined tonight by my co-host, guest host Colin Townsend. We're brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com, home of Asheville's original and oldest ghost tours. Colin, have you ever been on a HauntedAsheville.com tour?
I have not been on a HauntedAsheville.com tour. I've been on a haunted tour in Savannah.
Okay.
But I have not been on any in Asheville.
A lot of ghosts or paranormal activity reported in Savannah.
Yep.
At this one is Joshua P. Warren, my boss. He's back down in Puerto Rico, just to give you a little heads up, folks. He made it back down after months after the hurricane. And he says that his power's still spotty at best. Sometimes goes 12-plus hours with nothing, but he's got a little bit. We didn't even know if his stuff, like if he was had anything left, actually. They had left right before the hurricane hit, and he just got back there a couple weeks ago. I was talking to him the other night, and other than some illness, maybe a flu or something, he was doing pretty okay down there in Puerto Rico. Keep those people,
It been like 4 or 5 months since that, and they're still...
There's still, like, at last count, there was millions of people without power down
right.
there.
Right.
And he was explaining to me, you know, some of the power grid, some of the issues that they face down there. But, yeah.
Well, isn't one of the things, too, with that is that their infrastructure was already kind of crumbling, outdated.
Oh, yeah.
But because of the way funding and stuff like that works, they really only get the money where they would be able to rebuild the crappy system that they had to begin with. So what's the point of that? Why even...
Something like that. Yeah. And I think that they're, you know, in the process of trying to, you know, totally revamp that system.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a perfect time to go ahead and do that. But, there was plenty of times where he would be down there and doing the show, calling in here, and we'd have power outages. And this was well before the hurricane. You
right,
know?
Right.
But, he was the founder of those Haunted Asheville tours. And I took my first one a couple of years ago. I had never been on it. Learned lots of stuff about Asheville I had never known before. Very interesting.
What was the highlight of your tour? What really stuck out at you?
I really liked finding out about where they used to have the gallows on the other side of the fire department, where like Pax Tavern is now, and you have
right.
the fire department and the Jackson Building. Like on the other side of that is where they used to have the gallows and public hangings.
Okay.
And back in the day, pre-internet, pre-TV, pre-radio, that's what you would do maybe to like pass your Saturday. It's like, hey, let's go watch so-and-so get hung.
Didn't we used to play music in that building, in that Jackson Building? Or was that next
door? Right
the...
next door. It was right. the legal building.
Okay.
And, The Jackson Building also is on that tour.
I was going to say, isn't there the spot where there's like a target or bullseye or something in the sidewalk from where people used to jump or something like that?
I don't know if it's actually... for that, but like you don't notice it when you're walking down the sidewalk.
Right.
It just looks like a colored mosaic tile or something. But if you're standing at the top of the building, it's a bullseye.
Right.
And there's also the gargoyles at the top. The Jackson. Yeah. There's some pictures have been taken in the past of some weird things going on up there. You and I might have made it up that
high.
We
may have gone
perhaps
up to, yeah.
without
yeah.
incriminating ourselves.
No,
maybe.
Because aren't those the two buildings too? I seem to remember some story of. It was two brothers, and they had a falling out, and they had those two buildings, but there was no way to get in between. They were, like, right next to each other, but you couldn't get in between them or
something
weird.
Until we found out a way.
And ended up in someone's library or something.
Also, I want to give a shout-out, thanks to our new sponsor, M&D Paranormal. They have special expeditions, investigations you can attend, a retail shop in Marion. Check them out, and you can get all those links at speakingofstrange.com. While we were there at the top of the hour break, you and I were talking about Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
That was some stuff we were talking about. You said something about his car going to Mars, and you know him sending that car up there. And I was like, well, what's the end game?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, yeah, you could send a car up to Mars to prove you could do it, but he's thinking 25 steps ahead. There's a reason you know, he's right. He wants a vehicle up there. You know, maybe to get to the 7-Eleven. I don't know. Maybe he's going to build those. Who knows? But, I mean, why would you... And it's not like a space rover. It's a Tesla.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome car. But why would you send a car to Mars?
Was he sending it to Mars, or is it just, well, it ended just up, going like around it? Or is it supposed to like slingshot around the sun or some?
I think it was supposed to go to Mars.
Okay.
It did not end up where it was supposed to be.
Oh, it's already off track.
It ended up, yeah, I think in orbit, but it's out there.
There is a guy, I saw a guy has built a website that where you can track it. It was like where, he was just like an amateur space dude, but he has this whole thing where you can see where it's at.
Yeah, it says you can track it using mobile apps. It's a cherry red Tesla Roadster, and you can download apps like Sky Safari 6, Starwalk 2, and it'll show you where it is at any given time. It's going to spend the next several months near Jupiter. It's just crazy to think that somebody, as in Elon Musk, sent a car to really far, not near space, not like in near Earth orbit.
Right.
It's way the hell out there, you know. It's now considered a minor body in the solar system.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's got a star man at the wheel. It's a space-suited mannequin. You can't see it if you're an amateur, but professionals continue to capture images of its tiny point of light moving across the distant stars. Its current orbit will carry out beyond Mars into the inner edge of the main asteroid belt and will return it to Earth's orbit every 19 months, possibly for millions of years to come.
It'll need an oil change before that.
You were also talking about space trash.
Yeah. Well, I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and her take on it was that doing something like this doesn't really serve any purpose, and it's really just littering space, basically. And so my counterpoint was that we already have tons of trash that's orbiting the planet. And she countered with, yes, but this isn't just orbiting Earth. This is actually going out there. So should we really be sending up things like that that are just going to be out floating around? And what could be the possible long-term ramifications?
Well, I mean, if you think about like all those satellites that were put up in the Cold War.
Right.
Everything that's been put up is still up there somewhere for the most part.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think a lot of stuff comes back down, but it burns up before it ever gets all the way back down.
I'm reading that falling space junk is actually a problem that is it's getting bigger and bigger because of the commercial space race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, companies trying to get up there first, whatever, so they're blasting as many rockets as possible into orbit. But as the old adage goes, what goes up must eventually come down, and pieces and parts of those things are raining back down onto a planet. So SpaceX... That was like some amazing video, was it not?
Mm-hmm.
That thing landing. It's one thing to shoot up a rocket.
Oh, the two boosters when they land?
When it landed on that barge.
Yeah. Simultaneously, the two of them came down together.
That was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Well, SpaceX, also headed by Elon Musk, has a new plan to deal with falling debris. It's like he's got a corner on every part of that. He's sending stuff up. He's catching it when it comes down so that it doesn't plummet into the ocean and sink beneath the waves. They, you know, are operating those floating landing pads. The solution is a giant clawed net that perches atop a boat, ready to grab anything that falls down following a launch. And you can see a picture of it there. It looks like a gigantic, it looks like one of those things that hangs underneath a trapeze.
And so the idea is that that thing would catch it before what, hit the ocean or hit some area of land or...
Yeah, well, a lot of it's reusable.
Okay.
Equipment that you wouldn't want to lose into the ocean or have burn up, and much of the SpaceX business model. I mean, think how much that stuff costs, you know. It revolves around multi-use gear that can be repetitively shot into the stratosphere, and it's only useful if it can be recovered, hence the need to grab it. So it's less a humanitarian effort.
Yeah, it's more an economic decision.
Yeah,
that they're,
because I'm spending the money, I'm going to reuse it.
Right.
It's like my dad. Like, don't throw that sour cream away. I'll eat around the green part. It's still good.
Right.
It's still good. Yeah, he's what is it? It could save them up to $5 million.
Have they already built this thing, or yeah. they've already built it?
$5 million to Elon Musk. That's like the equivalent of me finding enough change mm-hmm. on the floorboard of the car to get a icy at the Speedway.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Elon Musk also, I had heard this on Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel was talking about this. He was buying it for Dax Shepard, I think was his intended. Jimmy Kimmel loves to buy gifts.
Mm-hmm. He's a giver.
He's a very giving guy. And he got him, he didn't get it yet because it's like you can put down on it, but it's the Elon Musk flamethrower, his tunneling startup that we were talking about that, that shoots
the
under.
Tubes, yeah.
Yeah. Boring company. Started selling a branded weapon over the weekend, and he put it out on Twitter and Instagram. He took orders for thousands of these $500 flamethrowers. And he's already sold, expectedly, over 10,000 units worth $5 million. Hey, there's that $5 million you just lost in space debris. And they plan on selling 20,000 of them. He joked on Twitter that the weapons would help in a zombie apocalypse, but that he's secretly not raising an undead army to generate demand.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. Like,
so then what is he saying that he's making them for? Just because it would be really cool to have a flamethrower?
He could build anything. Here's like a video of him using it. I don't know how that's legal because I'm pretty sure that flamethrowers are not legal to own.
Although I'm not sure. Who knows?
Well, I know you can get like the decommissioned ones,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it's legal to have like a...
Oh, look at that, yeah. And what's fueling this thing? Because like anytime I've seen flamethrowers, you know, you have the big backpacks on with the tanks for the fuel, and
yeah,
this seems pretty self-contained.
I don't know where that is coming from, but it's Elon Musk. It's probably magic, I would assume. Probably some form of Elon Musk black magic.
Mm-hmm.
But like him or hate him, the guy is doing some amazing things, you know? And where are those minds? The youth of today kind of worry me.
Do they?
Yeah, they frickin' do. You got a couple kids. You're trying to steer them in the right direction.
Yeah.
But so many kids today, they're like, you know, the stuff they haven't heard of. Mm. Well, when I was growing up, I mean, the Rolling Stones and the Zeppelin was ahead of, or behind me. But I knew about them.
Right.
Nowadays, it seems like kids don't have any interest in learning anything that came before them.
Yeah, I could see that, you know, and I do tend to work with that demographic in that 18 to 21 range, and I would say that that's true to a certain extent.
Well, coming up after this break right here, we're going to talk about that video we saw with the robotic dog. That's kind of terrifying.
Yes.
And more. This is Speaking of Strange, News Radio 570, WWNC. George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars. Listen, speaking of strange, where the unusual becomes usual, Sam the Animal Steel joined tonight by Mr. Colin Townsend, smarter than me with a bigger beard. They say he's just like me, but slightly less good looking.
And shorter.
And shorter and balder, with a much bigger beard. The reason Atomic Dog threw that in there, did you see this video earlier this week? Boston Dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
They terrify me. It's like, did you ever watch Fringe?
A little bit, yeah. I think we've had this conversation. I never really took. I've started it a couple times, and it never really took.
You really
you
need to get
kinda
into
got
season
on me
two,
about that.
Three.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a company in there called Massive Dynamic that Walter was one of the founders of, and then Leonard Nimoy was his character was the other founder. And basically, they had their tentacles in every aspect of life, and they had more money than God, and they did really weird.
Weren't they punching holes back and forth between dimensions or
alternate
realities or parallel universes?
Parallel
or
universes.
Like that. Yeah.
So, like in the other United States of America, there were still Zeppelins. You know, the Twin Towers were still there.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, what if things had taken a slightly different turn? There would still be a you, there would still be a me.
Yeah.
We might still be doing this radio show right now, but I'd have a big beard and you might not, you know, and I might be bald or whatever.
Wasn't that also the premise for Sliders, kind of? Or no?
I
never really watched that show either.
I used to watch it back in the day at the station early in the morning, so it would be like on Sci-Fi Network, you know, reruns of it. That was a good show too, though.
Yeah.
Jerry O'Connell, I think?
Yeah.
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 Well, this Boston Dynamics company, they're like one of these companies that just seems terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing stuff. You know, I don't think we need to know about everything all the time. There's stuff that we don't need to know about. Like if we knew how close we were to like a biological outbreak and that there's no antibiotics and everything, how close we are to dying by bleeding out every orifice of our body every day, we'd probably not sleep well at night. We don't need to know all that.
Right.
But
right.
somebody needs to know about it, and somebody needs to be doing something about it. But I don't know what these guys are up to with this dog thing.
And I actually did I saw this video earlier in the week, and it scared me so much I emailed it to all my coworkers saying, this is scary. You need to watch this.
That was on your own volition,
yeah.
And I just brought it up, and we're like, oh, man, it's the Spot Mini Robot. Earlier this month, it impressed with its ability to open a door all by itself and then hold it open. That was kind of weird. Like, it held...
Well, there's a couple things that kind of freak you out about this. The first is that because you see one robot go up to the door that can't open the door, and then it kind of shifts and sort of, I guess, looks over to the side. You don't hear anything, but you get the sense that in some way it summons or calls to this other robot that looks exactly the same, except that it has this sort of hook arm appendage on top of it.
It's like a neck and a head.
Yeah, yeah, and it calls it over as if to say, hey, I can't get this door open, come help me out.
And it held the door open for it.
Yeah, yeah, and then held the door open for itself so that it could also scoot through, and it opens the door, lets the one robot through, and then it follows behind it so that they can go off to...
Now,
I'm sure
that there are some practical applications for this technology, like think, service dogs or something like that, you know, aiding and assisting blind people or disabled people of that nature. But this thing is just dang terrifying. And so now they just shared a new video as of, you know, like 4 days ago. And Spot Mini pops up again to the now familiar door. And it's met with resistance by that guy. There's like a dude now who works there. And he's got a hockey stick. And there's a conflict between man and machine.
Now, this one I haven't seen. I haven't seen that
That's
one.
That's the one I was just showing
you. Oh, I thought you were talking about just the one where they opened the door. Okay.
No, like, so the guy is trying to hold the door shut.
Okay.
And the dog, if you want to call it the dog, because it resembles a dog, but without a dog head.
Right.
But it opens the door, and the guy ends up having, there's like a safety strap on its butt that he grabs and has to pull this robot back, and you're like, these things are learning.
Yeah.
You know, like the one's opening the door, holding it open. The other one can't do it, and it's like, hey, hold on, come over here, you know, I'll do it for you. So they're learning. At what point do the dog robots take over? And that's just like one small aspect. I mean, you know, AI is in just about, you know, so many things now that you can't let yourself dwell on it. But when I was watching that video, I couldn't help but think of like sci-fi things where we're like, the robots are going to take over. Yeah.
You know what I think, for me at least, I think part of what makes it so scary, aside just from the fact of these things learning what they're doing, is just the physical appearance of it. Something about those backward articulating legs, mm-hmm. you know, because we're just visually used to seeing leg, you know, appendages that bend in a certain direction, and the legs on these things bend backwards. You know, like, I guess like flamingos' legs, kind of.
Yep.
And so just something about the appearance of it makes it pretty scary. That, and they can run like 20 miles an hour or something crazy. And
the other one, know, that has the jump, the man-style robot, mm-hmm. you know, and the guy also wielding a hockey stick for some odd reason. I guess, are all roboticists?
You know, they're from
hockey players?
Yeah, they're all from Canada.
But he, like, you know, cheap shots this robot and shoves it over.
Okay.
Right? So it goes down. And, like, its feet, like, go up. It's like, meow. And then all of a sudden it's like, and it hops back up. And you're thinking that this video is, like, fast-forwarded, but it's in real time.
Mm.
You're like, dear God.
Yeah.
This thing, it jumps up.
Supernatural speed.
Yeah. Those things are weird because, like, they're almost got walking down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of intricacies in the human body that are incredibly difficult to render into a fake human.
Right.
You know, like, just the way we walk, it seems very normal to us. But programming that into a robot, they're always, you know, kind of herky-jerky.
Mm-hmm.
But they're becoming more and more fluid. And that one that was doing the backflips.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, what application that would come in handy for, but it's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you start getting into AI, and there was an interesting question posed about, can you tell the difference between AI and reality as it becomes more and more encompassing all around us? How do we know that we are real? How do we know that we are in reality?
Mm-hmm.
And it's in 1950, a fella by the name of Alan Turing, he developed his eponymous, his namesake test to pinpoint the exact moment at which this becomes possible, this being when the first machines take over and, like, surpass that of a human. The test, which asked a human judge to evaluate the behavior of a human and a machine to determine which was the machine, is the bellwether against which the advancement of AI has been measured ever since. And for, I don't know, like, the past several decades, the very idea... Remember, like, Watson?
Yeah, IBM's
IBM Watson.
Yep.
And it was on Jeopardy, you know, mm-hmm. and it ended up winning.
Yeah, or and then played, didn't it beat the chess master or something, too?
Was it Bobby Fischer? No, it was Kasparov.
Yeah, Kasparov.
But for decades, the very idea of a machine passing this Turing test was, like, total fantasy. And Blade Runner, you know.
Voight Kampff test.
Yeah, they kind of delved into it and foresaw a future when a machine would pass this test. Well, while Turing expected machines to reach this state by the year 2000, in reality, we're now in 2018. We're just now reaching the threshold at which AI can passably take on the role of a human operant in certain conditions. And, you know, it's becoming more and more of our daily lives, and it's, you know, you might even say infiltrating our lives. This guy, Alan Turing, he foresaw a world in which a computer with 100 megs, like... You remember,
it's
like,
cranking
100 megs back in the day. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
That was with your 14.4 baud modem there. 100 megs could fool humans 30% of the time, as with many predictions of his time. He totally kind of underestimated that one, how advanced our technology would become in the 50 years since his prediction, which our society has jumped. You know, it kind of all goes back to the Mayans there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there was like a period of time where they were super advanced, ahead of everybody else, then they went away.
Right.
They became extinct.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. How did that happen?
Right.
They were very ahead of everybody else, and they were disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then a long time passed before anybody got near that level again.
Right. And then we saw the same thing again with the quote-unquote Dark Ages, right? We reached a certain period of, or a certain level of...
There was a lot of disease and a lot of, like,
yeah,
poo.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of disease due to poo.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like, you look back, you're like, man, they couldn't even deal with that. And then all of a sudden it's like the Renaissance.
Yeah.
And then now, I mean, I guess the argument could be fought either way, that we are in some crazy state of enlightenment or the Dark Ages right now.
Right. Well, and it's this idea, too, of it's not a steady progression. It's, there's plateaus and then there's massive leaps.
But it seems like in the last several years, we have leapt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, think about, I don't have any grandparents left anymore, but when they were born, you know, flight had just started.
Right.
You know, like the Wright brothers literally had just flown 20 feet or whatever. And then by the end of their lives, they're on transatlantic flights to Singapore,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is pretty wild. So this jump now to where, you know, and I can see looking from that aspect, you know, of our grandparents' generation, you know, my grandpa didn't have a phone. He could care less about, you know, learning to use a phone
right.
or any technology. I mean, he was pretty stoked on the cable box,
mm-hmm.
you know, like 30 channels.
Yeah.
He could watch his baseball, you know. But, like, in a way, now we're becoming...
We're seeing the same thing now. Yeah.
When I was in high school, we didn't have computers.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I was thinking of, you know, my kids are, you know, third grade, fifth grade. They can't imagine, because I've had conversations with them about this, you know, thing called the internet and, you know, YouTube and things like that just didn't exist when I was their age.
It's always been there for them. For your daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wait, no, for your son. He's the younger one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So ever since he's been born,
mm-hmm.
that there's been YouTube.
Yep.
Yeah.
When it comes up a lot too with video games, right? So I talk about, you know, when I was a kid,
Castle Wolfenstein,
Space Invaders. I remember when, you know, when I was my son's age was about the first time I played Space Invaders, and when I explained the concept of them to him about a small little thing just moving left to right and shooting a little dot up in the air, he's like, "Yeah, that's boring. Why would you even do that? What was the point of that?" I was like, "But when I was a kid, this was mind blowing. It was just incredible."
But, I mean, those leaps and bounds in technology, just from the Commodore 64 to the iPhone X,
mm-hmm.
or I guess iPhone 10, my bad.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not the X, it's the 10.
Right.
I mean, the computing power in every one of our pockets is more than sent, you know,
mm-hmm.
the astronauts to the moon.
Yeah. And with all the great things that's brought with it, there have been... some arguably negative effects with that, which
and those we'll discuss.
We can talk about in the next segment.
On the other side of this break, you're listening to Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC. Listening to Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual. News Radio 570 WWNC, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com and the five fellows over at MND Paranormal. Give them a visit or a call. They're in Marion, North Carolina. You can reach them at 828-484-1637. Sam the Animal Steel sitting in tonight with Colin.
I have no nickname.
I was going to say, Colin, well, you're technically the animal.
Yeah.
Because the drumming aspect, you like right. Animal, the
yeah.
Muppet. I was given that name, it was just given to me.
Right.
Like George the Animal.
George
the
Animal,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but
that's
you're not nearly as hairy as
no, but my tongue is green and I do bite turnbuckles.
That was the Great Kabuki, I thought.
No, George the Animal still had
the
green
tongue? Okay.
He had a green tongue as well.
I just remember the hairy back. With
yes,
George
very
Steel.
Hairy. I think he, like, in real life was, like, really smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of those wrestling guys that seemed really dumb. I think he had like a triple PhD or something. I don't know.
I lived in the same apartment complex briefly with Gary Hart. Remember that manager from NWA?
Jimmy Hart.
No, not Jimmy Hart. It was the, maybe I'm getting his name wrong, but he was the manager
Gary
of the
Hart
Great Kabuki.
Gary Hart was a presidential candidate back in, in the 80s.
Well, whoever the guy was that was the manager of the Great Kabuki and also the Koloff, Ivan and
Nikita.
Nikita Koloff. Yeah, we see him at the pool every once in a while.
So you're telling me that Ivan and Nikita Koloff really weren't from behind the Iron Curtain?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, they were Russian.
Well, yeah.
Ivan Koloff. Is it? Yeah, Ivan Koloff actually lives around here.
Does he?
He's come to some of our benefits with Eblen Charities. Bill from Eblen Charities, huge. Me and him always talk wrestling. Whenever we're doing the school benefits or the toy drives or whatever, Eblen Charities is a big part of that. We always end up talking wrestling for a good 15 minutes. That guy knows, and I had left 1 year, and like 10 minutes after I left, like the Iron Sheik.
I was going to say, like, so the Koloff brothers were from Russia, but wasn't the Iron Sheik from New Jersey or something?
Yeah, I don't think he was from Iran. That song I played coming back in, that was Fear Factory and Edge Crusher. That was off their album Obsolete, which told the story of a dystopian future. It was like an operatic metal album. A dystopian future in which the robots rose and took over. And so the Edge Crushers were sort of like the police. That would enforce. They were the enforcers. And you did not want to, you know, mess with the Edge Crushers. You know, right. So you had to hide from them. It was a kind of a bleak album, a little bit bleak. But we were talking about, you know, the robot dogs. We were talking about artificial intelligence, how AI has permeated pretty much. I mean, I've got one of those Alexas, one of those Amazon Echo things.
I have a Google Home.
Okay.
Or the Mini, the Google Home Mini, whatever.
I don't really use it ever. It's just sitting there, and I have it muted, but I assume it's listening to everything I'm saying.
Right.
It learns,
yeah.
And right now it doesn't know a whole lot. It's kind of dumb because I don't use it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you use it, the more it learns. And you've got this creepy lady voice. And speaking of creepy lady voices, have you noticed at Walmart, if you're using the pay-as-you-go, pay-yourself thing, kiosk, if it says, you know, are you ready to pay? And you hit yes. Is there anything under your cart? You put in a 20 or whatever. And then as soon as you put in the thing, it changes voices to like an Australian or a British lady.
I have not noticed that.
It's very strange. They don't know why it does that.
I'll have to look for that because I pretty much always use the self-check whatever.
I don't want to. I want to have as little. That's the problem. Is I want to have as little to do with my fellow man as possible.
Yeah.
That's why I go to Walmart at 3 in the morning. That's why I use the self-pay option. I'm a genial fella. I can get along with people. I know how to play nice, but I don't want to see people.
Yeah. No, it's funny because I'm the exact same way. And it's ironic that I spent years as, you know, a cultural anthropologist and then also went into teaching and two things where you are either studying humans or interacting with humans constantly. And I'm like you. I'd rather just not deal with
people. They say
other
that,
people.
You know, like some of the time you live alone, some of the time you don't. I live alone most of the time, I would say 90.
Except for Maxie, but yeah.
Maxie, my kitty.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for him, I'd probably be dead.
Mm-hmm.
But like I don't talk to people. There'll be long stretches of time where I don't talk to anybody. And I read somewhere recently that if you go back to the herd mentality or to the tribal mentality, they would banish people. Like if you did something wrong, they would exile you to like the outer edges of the island or something.
And that was your punishment.
Yeah, you'd be by yourself.
Right.
And nowadays, and this is a problem in Japan as well, with you know, elderly people, not even elderly, there's people who don't have anybody. And we're alone more often. And I think we're more prone to look for that somebody or just a comforting somebody in the form of AI.
Right.
And maybe for some people, Alexa is like a weird partner. And, you know, they have these real sex dolls out of Japan that are like, you know, several thousand dollars that, you know, people are marrying and, you know, having relationships with these latex dolls. Now, granted, they look very realistic, but, you know, they're limited.
Right.
They can only do so many things,
right.
And only so well. But what do you think about the you being a cultural anthropologist to now, obviously, back? What was your area of expertise, or like where did you study most? What era?
Oh, like time period?
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of the, you know, the period of the transatlantic slave trade, so, you know, 1500s all the way up through 1800s, but, you know, I was mostly looking at things in a modern contemporary context.
Well, I mean, even in the slave trade, like, if you look in New Orleans, they, if I'm correct, they were given, like, Sundays off, and, like, that's where a lot of music in New Orleans came from, was from them taking the music and their customs of their homeland and having that one afternoon to be able to practice it, and that's what spawned jazz and calypso and all the zydeco, different types of music. But even in those folks with the worst of circumstances, they had each other. They had somebody, unless they were like locked in isolation or in prisons. You know, like the ultimate punishment is solitary.
Right. Well, I was going to say too, like with mental illness, you see a lot of, you know, what we tend to do is, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to institutionalize someone and put them in alone in a padded room.
Horrible idea.
There are other cultures, you know, what we would call, you know, some of these non-industrialized cultures or whatever, where if it was looked at where someone in the community had a mental illness, they didn't shun them and put them away. They brought them in. They would literally sometimes put them in the middle of town square and everybody would get around them and just, you know, interact with them and give them that human interaction and, you know, as a way to help them deal with whatever it was that was going on, not just let's shut them off in a room or...
Well, I think these are just so easy, and I'm not blaming all this on, like, AI or saying that it's... or that our reliance on technology is to blame. I think a lot of it does have to do with that. I think a lot of it is, you know, we've become more self-important, more self-indulgent, less compassionate as a people. If you were to go back on a timeline, even like, you know, in eras of history that we would look back on and be like, oh, that's just so, you know, ancient and barbaric. They were probably nicer.
Right.
Than we are to each other now. Did you see that Buncombe County this week got a new distinction? We were number one in the state of North Carolina in, was it obnoxious? I got to figure this out. It's arrests for bad behavior.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We've hit another top of the list. Let me find that. But, I mean, do you think that our reliance on technology, you were saying that...
Well, you know, There's been a lot of talk here in the last few years about this idea that we're becoming sort of more connected virtually, but yet, well, you know, this idea that, you know, someone could have like 500 Facebook friends, but they've never met their neighbor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have no idea. I know one of my neighbors.
Exactly. You know, where it used to be where, like, you know, you knew who your neighbors were. You could depend on your neighbors for certain, you know, the whole thing of like, can I borrow a cup of sugar kind of a deal, right? You know, where you go next door and you knew your neighbor well enough to where you could. Now it's, again, we have these virtual communities, but we're having less and less actual, real, true social interaction.
What are the ramifications of that?
Well, you know, I think what you said, it's this idea of lack of compassion, sometimes even getting to the point of apathy. At the same time, a lot of times with these virtual communities, you can have this certain sense of anonymity. So just this whole idea of trolling and just, you know, you can say things online to someone that you would never say to them in person because,
And what I find weird is that, like, these people who online, you know, join groups and they're diametrically opposed and they hate each other online and they say the worst possible things to each other. And they're like, no room for adjusting one's, you know, thoughts or opinions.
Right.
In real life, you would hold the door open at the gas station for that person. Like, you'd say, yes, sir, no, yes, ma'am. You know, like, you wouldn't be that person you are online to the old lady at the gas station.
And it also just seems more and more like people are becoming more and more set in their particular belief system, whether it's political or religious or philosophical or whatever. But it just seems like, again, there's less and less dialogue and more I'm this, so you must be that. This idea of othering, you know, the other with a capital O. It's like it's either you're in my camp and believe exactly what I believe or you're not in that camp. And so obviously I can't get along with you. And, you know, again, like, but the whole thing with news, like, you know, what the news that you watch, depending on what network or wherever your news source is, all it's going to do is reinforce your beliefs, right? If you're a conservative, you're going to watch Fox News. What's Fox News going to do? Feed all those conservative ideas that you have. And so it's just going to further reinforce that, whereas you're not getting other news sources and other points of view. And so increasingly, it seems like people are less and less even willing to entertain a different point of view or a different, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when we come back from this break, we were going to
break already.
It's already
going so fast. It's getting,
we were going to talk about how technology makes us forget.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I live to forget. I wake up to forget.
Right.
But maybe that's not healthy.
Maybe.
When we come back, you're listening to Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC.
If I could be anything in the world that flew, I would be a bat and come swooping after you. And if the last time you were here things were a bit askew, well, you know what happens after dark. When rattlesnakes lose their skins and their hearts, and all the missionaries lose their bark, oh, all the trees are calling after you, and all the venom snipers after you. Are all the mountains bolder after you? If I could be any one of the things in this world that bite, instead of a dented ocelot on a leash, I'd rather be a kite. And be tied to the end of your string, and flying in the air, babe, at night. Cause you know what they say about honey bears, when you shave off all their baby hair, you have a hairy-minded pink bear. And all the bells are rolling out for you, stones are all erupting out for you, and all the cheap blood suckers are flying after you. Yesterday, Daisy, May, and Biff.
Speaking of strange, where the unusual becomes usual, you got a hairy-minded big bad bear is what you got. You shave off that big bad bear hair. Yeah, her belly button was her leash. Lou Reed does not get you girls in high school is what we've come up with there. I found, we need to amend something really quick.
Yeah, let's go. Let's close that loop.
Oh, God. Okay, the Bengals and
Bengals versus Go-Go's.
What did you find out?
That Belinda Carlisle was in the Go-Go's.
Yes.
Not in the Bengals.
Okay.
And then I thought, well, for sure, though, there was some common member between those two bands, but apparently there was not. And unbeknownst to me, there was, in fact, a whole debate, you know, sort of on par of the Beatles versus Rolling Stones, which camp are you in?
I'll take the Stones.
There's also this Go-Go's Bengals debate.
I'll take the Go-Go's.
Take the Go-Go's. I would take the Go-Go's as well.
But yeah, so to amend anything that we may have said there.
Yeah, which one of us said it? Either, I forget.
I think you made me believe it.
I think you said that Belinda Carlisle was in the Bengals, and I said...
Right.
I said, did you know she would be... I said before she was in the Bengals, she was in the Go-Go's.
Okay.
Because I knew she was in the Go-Go's for sure. And you were like, no. But then, so it turns out...
I ran with it.
Yeah.
So before you send off any angry... text. That's just fake news. It just shows how stuff can be manipulated,
mm-hmm.
and we're sitting right across from each other.
Right.
So, double check.
And, you know, and it also shows with a quick Google search, you could figure all that out.
And that's what we were ultimately going for at the end of that thing was, that last segment was, with all of the, you know, advantages, like, this is the one I always use. When we were coming up, you know, say in high school or wherever. Let's say you had to get to the Masquerade in Atlanta to go see a show.
Right.
you had like a scrap of cigarette pack with like some scribbles on it. It's like, take this road to 85.
Yeah.
Take 85 for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Get off at the exit with a smiley face.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that, you know, getting back to our band, Vic Crown, before you were in Vic Crown, when we used to play a lot and play on the road a lot, it was before GPS and things like that. How we ever found any of the clubs that we played at,
pre-cell
or
phone.
Even the cities sometimes that we were playing at, was a miracle, honestly.
There was a lot of stopping and asking.
Right, right.
And now we're just so reliant. Like, a lot of times, if I'm just going home, I'll still pull up the GPS just because Waze will tell me if there's cops.
Right.
Or something, you know what I'm saying? It feels like, in a way, like we're cheating life.
Yeah. But, and it also actually, I think, kind of touches on what we talked about a little bit before, this idea of being alone versus being part of a community, is that it seems like more and more we are actually never alone, because what are you always doing? Like, you know, you're checking your Instagram or you're checking your Facebook and you're seeing what other people are doing, and whether it's the whole FOMO thing or whatever. But at any rate, you know, the fear of missing out.
Oh,
okay. You know, fear of missing out. So you're always checking on stuff because you don't want to miss out on anything. You always got to be seeing what everybody else is doing. But it's just this idea of, we seem to be losing a lot of that alone time.
That's not real, though.
I know. Well, yeah, that's true. But what I'm getting at is that we're, you know, even if it's just a surrogate, we're losing that alone time, right? Think of, for example, what did we ever used to do when we were sitting on the toilet before cell phones?
I don't really use my cell phone on the toilet. I'm a reader. I have like 8 books and a couple magazines. I like to read, but not my phone.
Right.
Like, when I smoke a cigarette or something, I'm usually on the phone, but I don't look at Facebook. It depresses me.
I've actually gotten off. I still have my accounts, but I don't ever go on.
I post occasionally, but I don't read. I don't really want to know if other people are happy. I don't want them to be happy.
And plus, it's always just a fake representation of those people's lives anyway. I mean, people are only going to show you the really super awesome stuff. They're not going to.
I posted the other night.
You know, I burnt dinner tonight. Oh, crap. You know, it's like,
I posted a thing. It was like a baby doll head the other night, and it was like, I just want to make somebody waffles. What does that even mean?
I saw that. I think I liked that post.
It was
a
good
picture.
Did I double
tap that one? Because,
it was a good picture. You know. But I don't want to know, like, if you know, like, my ex-girlfriend or something is happy. I hope to God she's not.
Right.
But I'm by myself and she's not. So at the end of the day, who's winning? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In this society of stuff, are we better off alone or with Alexa?
And with Alexa, are we ever alone?
No, as Jeff Bezos has got an army listening somewhere.
Right.
I don't know. But I mean, hell, the camera on my computer is right in front of me on the couch. The phone, the camera on your phone is always on. The mic's always on. They're tracking you.
Some guy in Romania is hacking in and just checking out your
Russia.
Live feed. You know?
Totally Russia.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, Colin, I think you said you're going to take off before the dark 30 hour.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Yeah. You got a ways to drive.
Yeah, I got to get back over the mountain. Got to be up bright and early.
Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Speaking Estrange. And maybe come back sometime and we can continue talking about nonsense.
Love to.
Appreciate it. The dark 30 hour is coming up next. The seedier side of things on Speaking of Strange. We're up all night to the sun. We're up all night to get sun.